Labor Camp Auschwitz-Monowitz, Exposing the Myth of Extermination Through Labor. By Carlo Mattogno. Published and distributed by Academic Research, Media Review, Education Group Limited, London, UK, December 2024. Online at armreg.co.uk. If you wish to access this book's source references in footnotes, its complex tables, or its bibliography or index of names, please consult the print or e-book versions. Introduction. The Monowitz camp derived its name from the nearby Polish town of Monowitz, Polish, Monowice. This camp was the largest subcamp of the Auschwitz camp complex. It was located just a few miles east of the Auschwitz main camp. The Monowitz camp served as an inmate labor pool for the IG Farben's Buna plant, located near Monowitz. In addition to German and other civilian workers, plus British and Italian prisoners of war, inmates of the Auschwitz camp complex had also worked at these chemical factories. This is why the Monowitz camp came into the focus of the IG Farben trial, which was conducted by U.S. authorities from 14 August 1947 to 30 July 1948 at Nuremberg, as Case 6 of their Nuremberg military tribunals. At that time, the Nuremberg International Military Tribunal had long since ended, and Rudolf Huss had been executed, in compliance with the verdict of the trial brought against him by the Polish authorities in Warsaw, from the 11th to the 29th of March 1947. However, in these proceedings, the subject of Monowitz had not been dealt with at all. At the Nuremberg IMT, SS Judge Konrad Morgan, who had to accept the extermination thesis for obvious reasons, without knowing anything about it, improvised badly by inventing nonsense, quote, "Herr Pelkman, then you were in Auschwitz proper?" Morgan, "Yes, I went to Auschwitz, and before I started with the investigation itself." The President, "When did you go there?" Morgan, "I cannot give the date exactly, but it must have been the end of 1943 or the beginning of 1944. Herr Pelkman, the method of extermination there was probably similar to the one you described yesterday?" Morgan, "I thoroughly investigated the entire stretch of territory and studied the layout and installations. The prisoners arrived on a side track, in closed transport cars, and were unloaded there by Jewish prisoners. Then they were segregated into able-bodied and disabled, and here already, the methods of Huss and Wirt differ. The separation of the disabled was done in a fairly simple way. Next to the place of the unloading there were several trucks, and the doctor gave the arrivals the choice to use these trucks. He said that only sick, old persons and women with children were allowed to use them. Thereupon, these persons swarmed toward the transportation prepared for their use, and then he needed only to hold back the prisoners that he did not want to send to destruction. These trucks drove off, but they did not drive to the concentration camp Auschwitz, but in another direction to the extermination camp Monowitz, which was a few kilometers away. This extermination camp consisted of a number of crematories which were not recognizable as such from the outside. They could have been taken for large bathing establishments, and that is what they told the prisoners. These crematories were surrounded by a barbed wire fence and were guarded from the inside by the Jewish labor details which I have already mentioned. The new arrivals were led into a large dressing room and told to take their clothing off. When this was done, "Herr Pelkman, is that not what you described yesterday?" Morgan, "Of course." "Herr Pelkman, what precautions were taken to keep these things absolutely secret?" Morgan, "The prisoners who marched off to the concentration camp had no inkling of where the other prisoners were taken. The extermination camp Monowitz lay far away from the concentration camp. It was situated on an extensive industrial site and was not recognizable as such, and everywhere on the horizon, there were smoking chimneys. The camp itself was guarded on the outside by special troops of men from the Baltic, Estonians, Lithuanians, Latvians, and also Ukrainians. The entire technical arrangement was almost exclusively in the hands of the prisoners who were assigned for this job, and they were only supervised each time by an Unterführer. The actual killing was done by another Unterführer who let the gas into this room. Thus, the number of those who knew about these things was extremely limited. This circle had to take a special oath." Unquote. There is no need to comment on such nonsense. The court handling case 6 therefore had no preordained quote-unquote judicial truth about the Monowitz camp. In order to bring it into line with the already widely known Auschwitz quote-unquote truth, it therefore had to resort to testimonies and, based on them, the subsequent distortion of the few documents adduced. In contrast to the Hus trial, in which the guilty verdict was predetermined from the outset, so that the two court-appointed defense lawyers, Tadeusz Ostaszewski and Franciszek Umbrejt, were practically an extension of the prosecution, the IG Farben trial came closer to being a fair trial. At least the defendants had real defense counsel, who tried to carry out their mandate as best they could. In the first months of 1944, more than 250 civilian companies were doing contract work at the Buna plant, employing more than 27,000 workers, as well as almost 600 prisoners of war and 5,100 Auschwitz inmates. The latter were organized into numerous labor units, commandos, who, during work hours, were subordinate to a civilian. Many IG Farben officials, foremen and plant employees, lived, often with their families, in the town of Auschwitz and the remaining houses in the former village of Birkenau, Polish, Brzezinka. The defense lawyers tracked down a number of these people and asked them to deposit affidavits about their experiences at the Buna facility. The starting point of this book can only be the indictment of the IG Farben trial, which I report and discuss in Chapter 1 with regard to the charges specifically concerning the Monowitz labor camp. The few general documents that were introduced during the trial are set out and analyzed in Chapter 2. In the scant Orthodox Holocaust literature on the subject of Monowitz, the many defense witnesses are virtually ignored. They were managers, foremen and workers belonging to the multiple firms that had worked in the IG Farben industrial complex, but, surprisingly, among them were also former prisoners, some of them Jewish. In Chapter 3, I present an extensive collection of their testimonies, which provide a coherent and comprehensive picture of what really happened at the camp. Chapter 4 describes the organization of the Monowitz camp's inmate infirmary, both on the basis of documents and on the basis of a detailed report, prepared in 1946 by Italian physician Leonardo de Benedetti, assisted by famous Italian author Primo Levi. Because of its importance, I reproduce it in its entirety in an English translation.